Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome everybody into On The Beat, brought to you exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network, a show where we bring you an exclusive interview with a different Bills beat reporter or journalist every single week, and we talk about the topics that are swirling around our Buffalo Bills. I'm Joe Miller, and you can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired alongside my lovely co-host, former Buffalo Bill, Jerry Ostrowski. We are excited that you guys are here with us. Please do me a favor. Please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this on. We would appreciate it if you would do that. And as we always say here at the Overreaction Sports Network, whether this podcast finds you around a cup of coffee, at the gym with your AirPods in, on the drive to work, or watching us live right now, one more time, let us just say welcome. Today, we are joined by Bills beat reporter slash journalist from New York Upstate and Syracuse.com, as well as the second half of the Shout podcast. We had the first half on, Matt Parrino, last week. A man who lives in the town I was born in, probably the nicest guy I know, and a man who is also jealous of Matt Parrino's hair. Ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Talbot. Ryan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Excited to be on the show.
We're excited to have you. Jerry, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I had a short day at work. Went and hit some golf balls at the range. I'm dialing in after this knee replacement. I'm pretty happy right now.
Yeah, this is Sunday's show. We started out with a bunch of audio issues, and now I've got like link up issues. For some reason, it's not broadcasting to like three of our destinations. So like the promo or the intro's running, and I'm sitting here like noodling through stuff trying to make it work, but it's not. But we're gonna roll on, and we're gonna talk OTAs because the OTA, in my opinion, Ryan, did the OTAs creep up on you with all the Stephon Diggs stuff? Like, it was all of a sudden, it was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, the players are coming to town.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that and then the draft as well. The draft is so time consuming this time of year, tracking the 30 visits to private workouts, trying to put that puzzle together, so to speak. And you're right. Phase one of the OTAs is now here, and it just kind of crept up on us.
Yeah, exactly. So what is your understanding on, in particular for the OTAs, phase one, phase two? Right now it's all voluntary, which means the players, obviously voluntary means they can show up or they can't. Coaches really can't be on the field with them. Jerry and I went through the ridiculousness of a lot of it, to include like defensive players can't play catch with anybody. Right. Like, just weird.
Well, I don't understand why the hell they're there. I mean, other than they all want to just, you know, want them to walk in and go ooh and ah, you know, see who worked out, who didn't work out.
Right.
Obviously, Epinesa's turned heads with his physique so far. He seems to be the leader in the clubhouse. What are they doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Phase one is the most bizarre phase because it's mostly meeting, it's strength and conditioning. It's players going through the rehab process if they're dealing with any kind of injuries from last season or something that they want to work on. But you're right, there's so many bizarre rules in this first phase. I belong snappers can't snap the ball. I mean, there's so much to this where you're sitting there like, what is the point of this? And I'm sure for the Bills, a lot of it's going to be the meetings, the new coaches, Joe Brady installing or talking a little bit more about his vision for his offense, which obviously he was there last season and for the last few seasons. But being interim offensive coordinator now, you know, running the show, there's going to be some changes there to the offense. So maybe talking about some of those changes and things of that nature. And like I said, the turnover on the coaching staff, that'll be good for the players and the coaches to kind of meet up as well. But overall, very bizarre stuff.
I do have to ask. I mean, I would imagine that there are quite a few changes because Brady, with the midseason change, couldn't really, you know, stick his whole entire offense in there in a week or two. So I would imagine there's probably quite a bit of stuff offensively that they're having to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you look at what he did when he was at LSU and when he was in Carolina, and you saw bits and pieces of it when he took over as offensive coordinator, some of the RPOs. The play action was big when he was at LSU and early on here in his NFL career with the Panthers. I think you're going to see an uptick in that pre-snap motion. I feel like the Bills didn't do enough of that pre-snap. Those are things that he was known for. Those are little nuances. But you also saw how the offense changed when he came in and he became the interim coordinator in terms of, you know, he didn't necessarily focus as much on feeding the ball to Stephon Diggs. Diggs still had a ton of targets, don't get me wrong. But there were weeks where, hey, the run game's working. We're going to stick with it against the Dallas Cowboys. And Dalton Kincaid's going to get a lion's share of targets. And late in the season, it's going to be Khalil Shakir getting those opportunities. He spread the ball around. And I can't remember who said it now, but it was almost like the Bills are trying to prove that they could win without making Stephon Diggs that focal point in the passing game. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Jason McCourty, now that I'm thinking. One of the McCourty brothers, I believe it was. And the Bills go 6-1 down the stretch. They're scoring points. They're, you know, they're not as dependent on one player as they were using this entire offense to the best of their capabilities.
Yeah, so they've got, it's structured, but it's unstructured. So they can spend, I think it's 2 hours where the team, the organization can tell them that they have to be there. So 9 to 11, 8 to 10 or something like that. And then there's, I think, 90 minutes or 2 hours where they can't tell them when they have to be there, which is effectively their workout time or their gym time or whatever. How much, my expectation would be that they would be doing some sort of installation or introduction in that 2 hour window when they get to be with the players, not on the field. But how much installation can they actually do? If, I mean, Curtis Samuel, if he's here, is going to benefit from it, right? But I mean, how much can you do for guys that aren't even here yet?
Real quick, to piggyback on Joe, I guess maybe to pinpoint that a little bit more, is there a limit on classroom time as there's a limit on the field time?
Yeah, 2 hours.
You know, that's a great question. We're actually kind of behind the curtain on that too. We don't know all the nuances. We just get to go to the media room on Thursday and kind of talk with Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott. We don't even know, other than piecing it together on social media, everyone who isn't there. The list usually tell us attendance is great, attendance is high. You don't get like the very, very specifics of it all. But, you know, a guy like Curtis Samuel, yeah, it would definitely benefit him. But the one thing I'll say is he played for Joe Brady in Carolina. Mm-hmm. So he might actually be helping some of these other players out that whether it's these UDFAs that they had last year that are coming into year two, you know, Shavers comes to mind, whether guys post draft, I think he's going to be actually a big asset to a lot of these younger players because he knows Joe Brady so well. And he kind of has an idea of what Brady wants to do and that vision in mind.
That's good. You know, I was wondering if there's any way to install Joe Brady's LSU offense with a in their prime Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, and Edwards-Helaire. If we could somehow do that, I think it would be great as well. But hey, as we talk about OTAs, obviously people want to know, you know, you hear things coming out of One Bills Drive. Any surprises? Anybody not there? Anybody that showed up that they were like, wow? Anybody showed up, they're like, hey, he needs to pick it up a little bit. What's the news so far? Has there been anything out of One Bills Drives? Yeah, any dirt?
You know, this seems like the most boring drama-free year to be doing this, because the last few years,
what are you inferring? What are you inferring, Ryan?
Is he going to show up? Is he going to be there? I mean, I guess last year too, or maybe a few years ago, there was talk about Jordan Poyer. Would he come in when there were talks there? But you look at the players on this team now, and there's not a lot of guys going into contract years. You know, there's Spen Brown, but I think he would want to show up and show how seriously he took the offseason, coming off of a year where he was completely healthy and had his best season to date. He wants to build off of that and get paid like a franchise right tackle in this league. I wouldn't say that Rousseau is going into contract year, because Brandon Bean has pretty much all but assured us that they're picking up that fifth year option. So there's very little in terms of will they show up or won't they show up. And I think overall that there won't really be many surprises. And going back to the thing, it is voluntary, but when you see guys like Josh Allen come into town, you probably want to be there if you consider yourself a leader on this team or on this roster.
Yeah, that's
Ryan. Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead.
I was just gonna piggy off that. Like, what you said about, like, if you want to be a leader on this team, and you would think that the players know that there's at least five open captain positions. And I don't know, Jerry, you could probably speak to it. How serious do NFL players take? I mean, hockey, the captaincy is a big deal, which we didn't even talk about that. That Granada fired today, this morning. But how serious do the players take the captaincy? Jerry, I guess to you, and Ryan, your thoughts after Jerry kind of talks, you know, you would think that there's probably some, hey, I want to be a captain. Go ahead, Jerry.
The emphasis on this, on having the C on your jersey, it is a pride thing, but I think that a lot of it has to do with the structure of the coach and how he handles his team. Mm. There are some coaches that are very, very open with everybody. You come into a team meeting, it's an open book. There's a lot of coaches that run more of a mafioso style of structure, where those captains are definitely the guys that he talks to. He talks to his captains, then the captains, it's their job to disperse that information down through the rest of the team. Mm. And if you have a gripe as a player, you go to your captain, and the captain then goes to the head coach. So it really depends on how that head coach structures that locker room and that meeting room, you know, whatever his style is. So I would think McDermott might be a little bit more open. Ryan, is that true? I don't think he's necessarily closed off to his players. He seems to be a guy whose door's always open.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with that stance. Doors open, talks with everyone, not so much that mafioso example that you gave. So I think really players show a lot of pride if they get that captain, you know, the C on their jersey. It shows they are considered one of the people that you can go to if you're a younger player. You go to these guys. Right. They are that culture fit that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have talked about since being here in Buffalo. And you know, sometimes it is the big name players. It has been the superstars. But you look at all special teams players over the years where they have made an emphasis of giving those guys quite a few captains, you know, the C's on the jerseys as well. Tyler Medovich multiple times, Tywan Jones, guys that have been in the league for a long time and can also help players out. It doesn't matter if you're a star or not. It's just kind of who has shown that they fit this mold of the culture that we have here at One Bills Drive, and who can these young players go to and learn from and kind of sit under the learning tree, so to speak.
But I think it's also evident how McDermott runs things when you look at his captains from last year. And yes, they always have an offensive, a defensive, a special teams. Yeah. But one of his captains last year is Gabe Davis, right? Mm-hmm. A guy that maybe a lot of people scratch their heads like, well, he's not really a superstar. He's not really super highly productive. But Gabe was a captain because of the way he worked, the way he showed up every day, the way he held himself, the way he was, you know, a pro. And so I think that, you know, I actually like that. I think that, you know, obviously the quarterback is always going to become a captain. Then usually whoever the guy is, you know, the Stephon Diggs, the mouthpiece, the guy that's loud. But it was cool to me that a guy like Gabe Davis was recognized. Maybe he wasn't the most vocal dude, but he led by example and how, you know, young guys need to work to become a pro. And I thought that was pretty awesome by McDermott and the rest of the coaching staff.
I agree. And, you know, Gabe Davis actually took a lot of pride in that. I remember on social media after it was announced and sharing that picture and joking a little bit about the picture that they chose for him. But the fact that he was so proud of being selected and what it meant to him, because you're right, he did everything the right way. He came every season prepared because he did the work in the offseason and he was kind of always ready for that next part. And unfortunate that he, you know, he did sign elsewhere in free agency, but I think a new chapter for him was needed. I think that the Bills needed to kind of move off of him as well to try to figure out a way to, you know, I don't want to say upgrade, but find something that maybe fits this offense more in terms of what they need on a more week-by-week basis, because there'd be weeks that he'd go off for 100-some yards, and then you'd go 2 or 3 weeks where he didn't record any catches and he only had a few targets. So a little baffling at times. So I think, you know, this split was good for both parties at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. We are, everybody that's joined us, you're listening to On the Beat on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. We're sitting here with Ryan Talbot, who has been kind enough to join us as we have flipped the script on him, and we are asking him questions versus him asking all the questions. Clearly, as we're talking about OTAs, it's a voluntary portion. You know, we get it. And I would imagine it's probably different at different teams. But from what you have gleaned or what you've kind of taken in over the years with Sean McDermott and kind of his staff, and maybe it's even different amongst kind of the coordinators and some of the assistants. Is there any type of keeping track of who shows up for the voluntary stuff? We always hear that, like, you know, when Josh Allen's there, when like your leaders come, it kind of proves how important it is. But is there a demerit system that you've ever heard of, or is there ever been kind of a side? Yeah, well, if he'd come to OTAs, then maybe he would be up to speed, for lack of a better way of saying it.
I personally haven't heard that here in Buffalo, but it wouldn't shock me if somewhere around the league there were coaching staffs and things where they would be up. Certain players didn't come, but because it is voluntary, because a lot of these guys are doing work on their own or with their own trainers in their hometowns, it's usually not a huge deal. But you know, Sean McDermott, every head coach in this league would love 100% of the players to show up, to be there for those meetings, to be there for the strength and conditioning, to check in, to kind of get things rolling on a positive note. But in today's NFL, I just don't think you'll ever see 100% participation, because, as I said, a guy like Stephon Diggs, he's working. You see the videos on social media. Yeah. He has trainers and works for defensive superstars as well. Some of these guys are also now even kind of doing their own summits, the pass rush summit, the tight end university. So in addition to training on their own, some of these guys are even teaching the next generation across the league and not just their own teammates.
What's funny is we used to call it mandatory, non-mandatory. Okay. It was non-mandatory, but you were expected to be there. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't, it was a big deal. But, you know, it's funny how the league has changed. When I was coming into the league, you know, the trend of going home after the season was over was ending. And it kind of was the infusion of the college coach coming into the NFL. Prime example, Jimmy Johnson. You know, those Cowboys players were like, hey, we're heading home. And Jimmy's like, yeah, I'll see you in 2 weeks because you're expected to be back there working out. And it was like, you know, I can remember last meetings, you know, checkout meetings after the season was over, and guys' trucks and cars would be lined up to get put onto the car hauler to be taken home. Guys would have U-Haul trailers connected to their trucks. Some dudes had their own trailers because they did it every year. And as I was coming to the league, then it kind of started shifting to everybody showed up all off season. You know, they have the minimal pay they give you to work out there, but now all of a sudden everybody's going off and doing their own thing again. So it's definitely interesting how that whole thing is cyclical and it's changed. But don't kid yourself, it's called non-mandatory, but it's considered mandatory.
Interesting side conversation or side story for me. So I lived in when I was in middle school and my first high school year, ninth grade, I lived in Clearwater, Florida, Seminole, Florida. I was a Seminole Warhawk for 1 year in the ninth grade. My stepdad at the time was had a car dealership and he would transport cars and stuff like that. And somehow I'm a huge Bills fan, right? And it's like the heyday, like the 90s are coming and everything else. And somehow he got the contract to haul Butch Roll's car, like down to Florida from Buffalo to Florida. And Butch Roll's car was in my driveway for like 4 days. And access back then isn't like access is today. Like, it was a big deal for me to sit in Butch Roll's car as like a 14-year-old kid. I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? This is Butch Roll's car. Like, so that's awesome. Sorry.
No, but no, you know, you said something earlier and I wanted to go back to it. And as we're kind of at the halfway point, a little past halfway point of the show, you know, we were talking about, you know, the off season and how the last so many OTAs, nothing, all anybody talked about was Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. He's not happy. He's happy. You know, and you had this very divided fan base and divided media, whatever, of people that had strong opinions on either side. Can you sense a levity in that building? Because we talked about it last week. I predict, especially the wide receiver room, just kind of a levity about it. You don't got to worry about it anymore. Yeah, it sucks that one of the best receivers in the league is no longer on your team, but all the baggage that went with it is gone. And there's got to be some sort of levity at One Bills Drive right now with Stephon Diggs now moved to Houston.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. And listen, you don't eat $31 million in dead cap if you're not kind, I don't want to say looking to move on from him, but if you're not more than willing to move on from him, and the fact that they were having these negotiations, and I saw Albert Breer said the talks had been going on for about a month before the trade took place. Right. So the fact that they were even entertaining it at that point, whether Diggs went to them or not, it tells you a lot about, yeah, listen, and we he's a great player. He's a superstar. He's helped this team a lot go from a perennial playoff team to a Super Bowl contender. But that welcome has worn out a little bit. And I'm sure it is, whether you're talking about the players, the coaches, it is maybe a little bit of a sigh of relief of, okay, we don't have to answer these questions this year. We don't have to worry about this. We don't have to worry about the cryptic social media. And you know, he's not the only player that does it. There's so many across the league that do that. But fans read into that, no matter whether it has to do with football or not. And it's just one less thing to worry about. Now you're looking at a very, you know, for the most part, young wide receiver room. Curtis Samuel is still a pretty young receiver coming in free agency, and Khalil Shakir entering year three. And I would assume at least one rookie receiver. My prediction is two.
Justin Shorter,
year two. You know, my bold prediction is they triple dip in this draft, and one of them would be very late, mind you. But I'd be shocked if they just bring in a lot of guys to compete. One guy that could maybe be that kickoff returner, since you want to bring someone in that maybe you think would be an ass in that area. It's going to be a whole different room. It's going to be so youthful and without ego, and you know, again, not a knock on Diggs, but that's a guy, an all pro, a pro bowler. And usually guys like that do have egos, and there's nothing wrong with that. They've earned that, so to speak, but it's a completely different day now in that receiver room.
Yeah, four of the five starting wide receivers are gone. The only one that's left is Khalil Shakir. The players for OTAs, last question on OTAs, the players are going to be made available, and you told me this today because I was sitting around waiting, refreshing YouTube, like, where are the interviews? And you're like, they're not going to be made available until Thursday. So who are you looking forward to hearing from on Thursday, and I guess why? What are you edging for?
So Josh Allen, first and foremost, and it's to close the book on the whole Stephon Diggs saga. And you know, how long did you know about it? And tell us, you know, what are your feelings? And Josh Allen, one, I think the relationship is fine, but he's going to be a professional. He's going to probably say, I think of Stephon Diggs as a brother. I love the guy. He did a lot of good for us. He's not going to ever throw a player under the bus. But it's going to be good because then it closes that chapter, and he'll probably give his thoughts maybe about the guys that are here, but maybe even a few of the wide receivers in the draft. He did a interview with Jordan Palmer and Kyle Allen for their podcast recently, and he was talking about some of the different receivers in this draft class. Maybe he touches upon that. When it comes to Sean McDermott, you know, since the last time we talked to him, who's running the show in terms of calling the plays on defense? I know he's probably getting sick of that question, but there needs to be some clarity there. Is this something where you want to hand it over to him? You know, Bobby Babich halfway in the season, early on in the season, do you want to let him run the entire preseason, see how it goes? It's tough because once you do hand those reins over, you don't want to take them away from a guy in his first year when he does get to officially call the defense. And McDermott, I thought last year, especially when this defense was healthy, arguably was their best performance with McDermott calling the plays.
It's good. Sitting here talking with Ryan Talbot from Syracuse.com, New York Upstate, and the Shout Pat podcast with Matt Perino. So switching over to the draft real quick. There's a rule in the NFL that not everybody probably knows about. And if they've heard it, maybe it passed them by or they didn't know what it was, that NFL teams can bring in 30 players for a visit. It's appropriately named the 30 rule, of which you have a running list going currently at NewYorkUpstate.com where fans can go there and check like all the players that have been in, who've been out. Who are some of the top 30 guys that the Bills have hosted, just kind of off the top of your head? And who are the ones that you find the most intriguing? Like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I'll start with some defensive players. Latu out of UCLA. Probably my favorite edge rusher in this draft class. Now, he had neck fusion surgery a few years ago. He had to medically retire at one point, but then he left Washington, went to UCLA. It was cleared by all the doctors at UCLA, had 23.5 sacks the last two seasons, highly productive, great hand usage, great motor. The edge position is just somewhere where the Bills have definitely tried to address it in free agency in the draft with different levels of success. But if he was a player that was sitting there at 28 and the Bills felt like, well, the first four or five receivers are off the board, we like a lot of guys, but we don't love them as much as we'd like Latu. He is someone that is really appealing to me because he immediately upgrades that defensive line. And, you know, easier said than done sacking a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes in a big game, but you need guys that get after him on a regular basis, and the Bills haven't been able to show that come postseason nearly enough. You had Cooper DeJean today was in town, and depending on who you're talking to, the team you're talking to, some see this guy as a number one, number two corner, some see him as a future all-pro safety. That position versatility would be very, very attractive to Sean McDermott and be bench, where both positions sneakily are needs for the Bills. You look right at Rasul Douglas, 30 years old, entering the final year of his deal. Besides your starting duo there, what's the depth going to look like behind them as rookies? Behind them in terms of the depth, Kyrie Elam, you still don't know what you're going to get out of him. You have a lot of guys that you like, but DeJean, someone that might be your number one cornerback in a year, or a number two corner, or an all-pro safety where, yeah, you bring in Mike Edwards, you re-sign the Rat. If you have someone back there, though, that you have that much faith in to be, you know, a ball hawk, to be a guy that you know is not going to be out of place, that's big for this defense, too. So those two guys obviously come to mind for me. But then a ton of wide receivers. Xavier Worthy, the Bills really do covet speed. 4.21 doesn't lie, but you worry about the frame. You worry about the durability. There have been players that have been more successful in recent years with a smaller frame. Troy Franklin's interesting to me just because the Bills have done so much due diligence on him. Okay. You have a private workout with him. You meet with him at the combine. And at the combine, I think it's 45 formal interviews that you have. So you do interview a lot of people. But then you also bring him in for a 30. The more boxes that you check in terms of the meetings that you have with these players, the more interesting it becomes to me.
Did we lose you?
Nope, still here.
Yeah, lost you there. Lost you. Just finish that last sentence. Oh. The more boxes you check, the more, and then we lost you.
Oh, the more boxes you check, yeah. You know, the more intriguing it is in terms of, is this a player that the Bills are that high on, where they're doing their homework multiple times to say, this is someone we really want to add to our roster.
Yeah, very good. I think you actually you tweeted today that of the Bills' first round draft picks, only one, not including the COVID year, actually did not come in for a 30 visit. So
I will ask this, being the offensive lineman of the group. You know, they're going to take McGovern and move him to center and pencil him in as a center to fill in for Mitch Morris. Do we have the backup on the roster? And if not, have they brought any center prospects from college, the collegiate ranks, into this top 30 group to take a look at them? And has there been any rumblings about that position? Because if you look at what they've done up front, most are back. You got Edwards back. Right. You bring in Lyle Collins, who can solidify as a third tackle, or he can start at left guard, which I think is probably where they'll try him at first. What are we going to do with the center position?
Yeah, so in terms of what they have on the roster now, Alec Anderson would probably be someone in play for that backup role. He showed a lot of versatility last year in terms of where they lined him up over the summer in the preseason. I thought he actually played fairly well there at center. You know, the whole Mitch Morse release did catch me off guard because they had just traded Ryan Bates, and it was like, well, they are going to bring back Morris for another year, because you thought of Bates as that guy that was either going to be the heir apparent, or in the case of what they're doing now, he would have stayed on his backup. But that's one option. No 30 visits that have been announced have been centers, but they did have a Zoom interview with Nick Gargiulo. I probably just butchered that last name, but center from South Carolina. So they have done a little bit there. You know, Will Clapp is another guy that they signed that's played a little bit there at center. So they have players. I just don't know if they're set on someone in terms of who is that next man up in case this doesn't work out.
Yeah. We're, You talked a little bit about your offensive strategy, what you think the Bills is. You said you've got to take it. Was it three or four wide receivers? You said triple dip. You said three, right?
I said my bold prediction would be a triple dip. And you know, I remember it was last year or 2 years ago, the Packers did that. They picked two earlier, and then they picked one in like the seventh round. And I don't think the seventh round player did much or has done much to date. But in such a deep wide receiver class, you know, why not throw a dart late at a guy that you really like to kind of bring in and compete? I know they do have some young guys. This fan base is enamored with Justin Shorter. I love Khalil Shakir and the trajectory he's had in his first 2 years. It felt like the day after the season ended, he was working with Eric Mills again, training for this upcoming year. I've mentioned Curtis Samuel in the fit there, but you want to make sure that wide receiver is not an issue for the next few years. So the best way to do that in this draft is to try, you know, go out and get two or three guys where you hope all of them work out, but you're hoping at least one of them do. And then all of a sudden it's not an issue. You have guys that are on cost control contracts for 3, 4, 5 years. If it's a first round player, if you include that fifth year option, which that's not so much cost controlled, but still better than what some of these top of the line receivers are getting on the open market.
You know, I think that, and I know we're coming up against it, and I think this wide receiver class is so deep. Somebody could fall to us in the first round that we like and take. But the Dijon kid out of Iowa is somebody that I for one am more panicked about the safety situation and the defensive backfield than I am the wide receiver room. And with this kid, you've got a kid that could be a corner if you had to have him a corner. I think he'd be a lights out safety. And then he's also that kind of they play that box corner, that guy that can come up and play the run and play that corner role. I think he's a prototype for this defense. If he's still available when we pick in the first round, if that receiver that's we really, really covet's not there, I mean, do you take a chance to wait into the second round, or do you take them? I mean, that like I said, I have more of a panic about the secondary than I do the wide receiver.
No, I think you raise a valid point. And if he is there, I think you almost race to the podium. He's one of those players you would race to the podium for in any given year. So it wouldn't shock me if they did surprise this fan base and went with a kid like that, because, you know, trading up in round one, which has been another big discussion for Bills fans, is so difficult to do based on the draft capital that you have to give up. But if the Bills do go with the defensive player in round one, it won't be as difficult to go from 60 into the second round with a lot of the draft capital that they have this year and next year. So if there's let's say three receivers that they really like, they can move into the 30s, late 30s, mid 30s, and it wouldn't cost an arm and a leg. It would be something that would be pretty attainable with the draft capital they have now, and they could still get that wide receiver. I know they don't have a third round pick. They were kind of banking on that Tremaine Edmonds compensatory pick to come back as a third, but with all this draft capital, they have so many pieces that they can move around that they could get back. They could get into the third round. They could stay put in the fourth round and still get a pretty good wide receiver. Tez Walker out of USC is someone that they've met with multiple times. I think he might be available early on day three. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but in round four, you're not going to get many better options than a guy like that. So there are guys out there, and if you get one in the second round, get one in the fourth round, and then get another one later on day three, you go in and you obviously hope for the best, but a player like Josh Allen is going to make life easier for these receivers, and Joe Brady is going to make life easier for these receivers. You saw what he did down the stretch with Dalton Kincaid and how well Kincaid played. And he always had a game plan in mind. One thing I really liked about him is he wasn't so much, hey, this is what we're going to do every week. We're going to come out firing. We're going to throw the ball 35, 40 times. If something worked in a given game, he stuck with it. Right. I can't remember how many times he ran that same run play against the Cowboys, but it just kept working. So why go away from something that works? He's not someone that's saying, I'm going to go in with this game plan and I'm going to hit my head against the wall over and over again if it's not working. Whereas I'm going to go in, and if I see something that works, I'm going to keep going after it until they can stop it or show they can stop it.
Yeah, we just spent an awesome 34 minutes with Ryan Talbot. Ryan, why don't you do us a favor and tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. You can find my work at nyup.com and syracuse.com. You can find Shout a Buffalo Football podcast and all your major podcast platforms.
And you can find it at Wingnuts once a month. Which I've gone to a couple times. That's like the place to be. Everybody shows up over there. Jerry, any final thoughts before I get us out of here?
No, I just really appreciate Ryan spending the time with us today, talking about things going on at Wimbledon's Drive. I look forward to tomorrow's interviews. We'll be watching, and I know that you and Matt will have a lot on that on the Shout podcast, and look forward to it. And again, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're a busy guy. You got a family, and we appreciate it.
Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been tuned into On the Beat on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. My name is Joe Miller. That's Jerry Ostrowski. And joining us for this episode was Ryan Talbot. For me, for Jerry, for John, for Ryan, go Bills.
Go Bills.
Ryan won't say it.